No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'm your host, Jess Root. On the line, I've got Seth Cox, and we are in episode 117. Our show following the 2016 NFL Draft. This is our post-draft show. Seth, how's it going today? How are you doing tonight?
It's good. It's good. Draft is over. The hot takes are still flowing in about the draft. But overall, I think it's been a pretty pretty mild post-draft kind of time outside of all the hate the New York Jets are getting for taking Christian Hackenberg.
Now, the two of us spent the draft a little bit differently. You actually spent the weekend in Chicago. I was at the Cardinals team facility Thursday night, Friday night, and Saturday during the day. So I could, hobnob with the other media members and get the picks as they were coming in. And then, well, the fun part, I'll tell you that the fun part is about that is when you get the new draftees on the phone, and it's just a few minutes after they've had that phone call with the team. So it's fun. We got to listen to Bruce Arians and Steve Keim. How was your experience out there? Other than you told me that you got gobs of rain on, what is it, the third day?
Yeah, on Saturday we got rained out, but Thursday was awesome. I mean, it was cold, but I mean, we went down to Draft Town and tried to get into the draft and just weren't picked. It's kind of a weird, like, random lottery selection type thing. It doesn't cost any money or anything like that. It's just they kind of try to pick people that represent their teams. I had my Cardinals shirt and jacket on, but didn't get picked. And so from there, we just kind of spent the night walking around Draft Town and then hitting up some downtown area and enjoying the draft, and kind of the atmosphere. And it's for people that have never been to Chicago, it's so much different than anything Arizona can ever, like, think about having in terms of just sports and fandom and the way it works there and how ingrained they are into this. Whether or not they're better fans, I can't say that, but just the way they go about it, there's so much passion and just it's like an all-day event as opposed to something you get excited for one day or a part of a day, and then you have all your other things. Like, if you do football things in Chicago, it's literally your entire day. Like, people were talking about how they took the whole time, a whole day off work to spend, to get a Draft Town when open, to get in line so they could get seats inside and be at the selection process. And it's a crazy experience.
And this was year two for me and as a media member, and I enjoy it. It's a grind, I'll tell you, after doing the full, I do the full day of my regular job, I'd like to pretend that the whole Cardinals thing is the only thing I do, and I try to downplay it when I'm with the other media members so it doesn't look like I'm doing that as a hobby. But it's fun, and I have a couple guys I follow on Twitter that have picks ahead of time. When it comes to small school guys, Emery Hunt is a guy who's fantastic at it, but another account that's a great follow is Draft Diamonds. And this guy is super connected and knows picks right away and was ahead of everything. And so it made me look kind of smart in the media room because I was following the right guys. So tonight we're going to talk NFL drafts. Now, Seth is one of our contributors at RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the co-host here at Revenge of the Birds Radio. Also contributes on the site, particularly when it comes to draft stuff. He is my go-to guy, as he He is my draft expert, and my expertise when it comes to draft comes to trust in him, reading what other people have to say and forming my own opinion of that. So I got to lean on him quite a bit. I run RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, best fan-run site that I believe it is the best community of Cardinals fans you're going to find, because it gets fan content written by fans and with an insider's perspective. Seth also hosts the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast, who they just had their draft grades show, actually fantastic way to do it. If you like beer, you will get a little kick out of this, is they do grades based on beer. I listened to the show this morning. It was a really good show, I'll have you know.
Well, thanks for listening. Yeah, it's fun to do, and I Justin broke it down for you, because you don't drink, but
I understood the concept, but I was like, what? I don't know any of these beers.
So yeah, he went the different route for you and put it in pizza details. So yeah, but it was you know, the whole thing with draft grades is it's just so hard. And I get what they're saying, right? Like, oh, you gave an opinion on the player, so I'm gonna grade the draft and what they did now. My problem with that is always, like, there's no accountability, right? So when somebody gives the I talked about it on the show, when somebody gives the, I think it was the 2012 Seattle Seahawks draft an F, and then, you know, that's the draft that basically was the reason they won the Super Bowl. Or maybe it was 11, I think, but you look back at that and kind of, you know, you kind of laugh, like, and so that's what makes draft grades, like, right after, kind of silly. And so the way I like to look at it is that it's a draft. It's just fun. Like it's a fun experience. It's fun building, you know, like for instance, I wasn't a huge fan of, you know, spoiler alert, the St. Louis Rams draft. I'm not a Jared Goff fan. Tyler Higbee has a felony assault charge hanging over his head. Like, I just didn't get the draft.
And Higbee, the interesting thing, the Higbee thing, which I find odd, is some of the things that have come up with things that he said, you know, it's kept a slurs, and he's going to a place like Los Angeles, that is not going to go well.
Exactly. And so, you know, and so, like, for me, I would have given him like a D. But if Jared Goff ends up being really good, I'm going to look like a moron. And and so, you know, I get the point of it, and I do. And so I just say, you know, I wasn't a fan of the draft, but I understood it. Like, and you know, I kind of compared it to beer and, like, a light, like, domestic beer. Like, you know, is it my first choice to drink? No. Like, and you compared it, you know, like you said, to Little Caesars Pizza. Hey, we're having a party. You're going to eat the Little Caesars Pizza that the host bought, because it's pizza and it's there. It's not your first choice, probably not your second or third choice, but you know what? It's pizza. It's there. It's good. Same thing with the beer theme, playing off the draft thing. And, you know, that's how I look at it. It's, you know, it's still a draft. It's still fun. It's still exciting for the fan base, and it still can lead to something good. And, you know, in 3 years, if they're ready to draft another quarterback again, and Goff stinks, like, you know, I think he will, then, you know, it wasn't a good night and they got hung over and woke up with the wrong person in bed. So that's, you know, that's how you look
at it.
That's
a great metaphor. So Revenge of the Birds Radio, you can find all over the place. We are hosted on Blog Talk Radio, so you can find us there. If you know anything at blogtalkradio.com, we post the shows on revengeofthebirds.com. You can also find us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and also on Google Play now. NFL Draft Breakdown, you can find on the site, NFLDraftBreakdown.com, SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher Radio. Is there anything else, anywhere else that you can find your show?
No, that's where we're at. And, you know, we're finished up our kind of the 2016 NFL draft season, and we're going to head into the review stage and really, you know, take a look at the analysis that we've given. And then we have 8 weeks scheduled to kind of get us through the summer, to look at what our guest graded and how, you know, that affected their analysis and the way they look at the NFL draft. And then, and even a couple of them, how that 2013 class made them, you know, stop writing about the NFL draft. 'Cause by that point they realized that I'm not great at it. I'm spending a lot of time on it and I'm getting nothing out of it. And so they, you know, focused on other things, and, you know, it's going to be enjoyable and interesting to look back. And, you know, for instance, I had Geno Smith ranked like third in the class. What did I see in Geno? And do those things that I saw in Geno, is that what scares me about a guy like Jared Goff? And I can already tell you the answer is yes, because I've had this conversation a million times with Justin and a couple other guys that we have a group text message with. And so I think that's what's important about the draft, to go back and look at what you said, where you missed, what you got right, and how you can improve. And that's what we're going to do over the summer to kind of keep the draft thing going.
And we'll have stuff to talk about here on Veg the Birds Radio with, you know, the Arizona Cardinals stuff. So we're going to talk NFL draft. We're going to talk about the Cardinals specifically. So we're going to go back over to the picks. We're going to talk about the players that we liked. Do we like them? Do we not like them? You know, if we don't, who are perhaps some other options that were available who were on the board at the time? We're going to give sort of our grades, if you will. Which of the players are going to impact this year down the line? And then we'll kind of talk a little bit about the teams in the NFC West, as well as, well, the undrafteds. The Arizona Cardinals signed 16 undrafted free agent rookies, including Alabama quarterback Jake Coker, a couple of long snappers, a punter, a Canadian cornerback who's really fast. So there's a little bit of intrigue there, because undrafted rookies also bring all sorts of fan intrigue, because everyone wants to know who's going to be the next star that didn't get drafted. The Cardinals have had some success with it. But next on Revenge of the Rage, we're actually going to go ahead and start talking NFL draft. Let's go back next and talk about each of the individual picks. Now, talking NFL draft about Arizona Cardinals, the Arizona Cardinals now have six new players drafted in the first round. Defensive tackle out of Ole Miss, Robert Kimdichie. Second round pick they didn't have. That was as a result of the Chandler Jones trade. In the third round, at the end of the third round, they pick up Texas A&M cornerback Brandon Williams. Then turning around in the fourth round, they go with Marquis Christian out of Midwest.
You skipped somebody.
Who'd I skip?
Evan Bum, Bame.
Oh, Bame, that's right. Fourth round is Evan Bame. Evan Bame out of Missouri. I'm trying to, that's what I get for going for my memory. So fourth round out of Missouri, center Evan Bame. Fifth round, they had two picks. They go with defensive back Marquis Christian out of Midwestern State, and Harvard offensive lineman listed as a tackle in college, listed as a guard with the Cardinals, Cole Toner, and wrapping it up with defensive back Harlan Miller. At the end of the sixth, they didn't have a seventh rounder because they traded for Matt Barkley, which made it really nice personally media-wise, because last year I had to stay till the very last pick was made when they picked Gerald Christian, then get him on the phone, then have Steve Keim and Bruce Arians come in, and this time, end of the sixth round, get the conference call, get the draft, you know, and I got home, I was home before the draft even ended, so I can appreciate that.
Yeah, and I forgot to ask you while you were talking about it. What do you guys do? What'd you guys do on day two? Like, did you get there late, or did you just hang out the entire draft on day two until they picked?
I was there from the beginning. So I left basically from work to other work, and so I got there about four. Now a lot of the other media people, because they introduced Kimdichie to the media at one that day, so they were already there hanging out. You know, day two is still intriguing, so I was still tweeting out pics, talking, you know, commenting of the things that I saw. But yeah, basically was hanging out until and eating the spread that the Cardinals had for us until the end of the third round. Yeah, and they fed us pretty good.
So, Kimdichie, you and I have talked about him quite a bit. We were both fans of this pick, obviously, fans before the draft. What was the reaction like in the media when it got there? Did people think he was in play, or was it more, you know, I don't even know who else was there, to be completely honest, that was like, oh, they got to take him. What were the, like, media reactions before the pick? Was he the buzz?
He was. Right before the pick came in, as it looked like he was available, Kent Summers, Mike Jarecki both said it looks like he's going to be the pick. I don't know if they were getting their info from somewhere or they're just that what they've been told. But I, for one, I've said it on the show. I couldn't imagine a more perfect scenario for this draft than to have Kendiche drop, because he is an elite talent there at the interior line. He does some things that are really special. No, he's not perfect, and the character issues, you know, brought him down. But for the opportunity for the Cardinals to pick up someone in the first round to impact this year and years beyond to be a potential star, that was I couldn't have dreamed up a better scenario. In fact, that's the scenario I dreamed about, and I kept waiting. I'm a fan too, so I'm in the media. One of the media guys who I sit with, I was talking, come on. I kept telling him, come on, let's get Team Dichi, Kendiche. And he's like, you nailed it. I mean, was it a case I nailed the pick so much as that's what I really wanted them to. I wanted them to pick Kendiche, and I got it. Yay!
Well, and I think both you and I, you know, we tried to explain to fans throughout the process, especially fans that were so against the name before the pick even, you know, occurred, that there was a reason they met with this guy so much. I mean, they flew Buckner out to Ole Miss. Then they had him come in. Well, they met with him at
the combine
first. Then they flew Buckner out to meet with him at his pro day. Then they brought him in for a private, like, they call it a workout. I doubt he did anything physical the entire time he was here. Nobody questions his physical ability.
Right.
And so you and I, you know, that was much like the Cardale Jones thing. They do this when they're interested in a player that there is a red flag on. You know, a guy like Brandon Williams that we'll get to, there's no reason to do that. Like, there's no red flags. Like, right. Like there's no off-the-field red flags. There's no, okay, what is he? No red flags. There's, okay, it's a third-round pick. We're going to take a chance on an upside, you know. Quarterbacks and first round picks are different animals. Like, you have to, you can't miss on a quarterback, or else, you know,
it sets your team back, franchise back years.
Well, and even if it doesn't, even if it's a Logan Thomas pick, the fan base bemoans it. What were you doing? You wasted so much time. It's like, no, not really, but, and obviously, like you said, it can set back your team if you miss on a first round pick. It hasn't hampered the Cardinals missing on Jonathan Cooper yet. You know, obviously, Deion Buchanan they hit on, and we have hopes for DJ Humphreys. But, you know, you can't consistently miss on first-round picks, and you especially can't miss with off-the-field stuff when there's known off-the-field stuff. Now, I'll give this to Robert Kendiche. He's never failed a drug test. He's never gotten in trouble with the law outside of the one time where he fell out of a window at a hotel. Yes, that's a bad spot. And I was talking to somebody about it, and they were telling me that a person they know said there was 10 joints rolled on the table in the hotel room. I don't know if that was common knowledge or not. That was the first I had heard of that. And it was like, oh. But none of them popped, you know, and so that's, you know, that's an interesting thing. But you look at it, and you and I both saw the talent, right?
Like, oh my gosh, yes.
The talent was undeniable. And so you have to weigh that, the pluses and minuses. And what you weigh on Kendiche more than anything was, how much does this kid love football? Because he's so talented in so many areas of life. You know, he plays the saxophone. He's very intelligent. He's very, you know, well-spoken and read. And so the question wasn't like, oh, is he going to flake out because he's going to go get busted for pot three times like Darrell Washington? The question is, how much, you know, does he want to invest in football? Because the kid's got a future in doing – basically whatever he wants because he's so talented and smart. And so that's what they needed to understand about him, you know, before they invested that pick. Because the talent on the field was never questioned, at least to me. It should have never been questioned. And I think you saw that, and that's kind of why they, you know, they made the pick at 29 over, you know, some other talented. Chris Jones, I really liked. Everybody knows that. But I wouldn't put Jones on the same level as Kimdiche.
Right, right.
Emmanuel Ogba, eh. Miles Jack, I mean, you could sell me on it. Noah Spence, I mean, you want to talk about red flags, right? Like, and so, I mean, really, and thank God it wasn't Jihad Ward, who's like basically a homeless version of Robert Kimdiche. So, so yeah, I mean, when you get not just a talent, but a freak of nature, and that's, you know, honestly, that's what Kimdiche is. He's a freak of nature athletically. You have to just be excited about that as a fan, no matter what your reservations are of him, you know, with his quote unquote off the field issues.
And you could tell they vetted that out a lot. And, you know, as kind of it came out right before the draft, during the draft, and I wrote about it today on Tuesday, was that Michael Bidwill, the team president, is very involved with sort of the evaluation process, but it's not so much the football side as they lean on his experience as a federal prosecutor, and they're trained to kind of, you know, they're trained to pick up nuances and body language as to what is truthful, what is not truthful. And they use that. And so anytime, and he even explained it, anytime that there is a character issue or question of character, they bring him into the equation. And that was the last thing they did when they flew out to Los Angeles with Steve Keim and Michael Bidwill. How many times did Kimdiche have to tell that story? Hundreds of times, I think, between the Cardinals and all the other teams that talked to him. And Bidwill was comfortable with it, that this was an isolated event. This wasn't a kid. It's not a troubled kid. It's not even a Tyrann Mathieu situation, because Tyrann Mathieu was he had troubles. I mean, he had gotten himself in the wrong situation. He was doing things the wrong way. He loved football, but was turning it around. And one of the biggest things they found is that there was remorse there. He felt bad about it because he's not like some of these other a lot of football players that come from troubled homes. They live in, you know, inner cities. He has a great family setting, very, very educated, well-to-do parents, and so he got caught up in a moment. It seems like out of character, whether he got caught up with his teammates, his teammate who also had that unfortunate event come out on Twitter might have been involved in, and he suggested that he alluded to that a while ago, and you sort of raises flags for his former teammate as well. But I love the pick. He's a guy, actually, you know, he reminds me so much of Darnell Dockett. Now, Darnell Dockett wasn't a first rounder, and he had played with a chip on his shoulder his entire career. But I see the same type of player. He kind of looks like Dockett. And personally, he has a like, face. He looks like him. He's odd like him. And then I even asked Bruce. I asked BA about the presser after this. Like, do you make any comparisons? The doctor said he's got explosive, but he says Kimdiche, he's a little bit bigger, he's a little bit faster, and he's a little bit stronger than Dockett. And that just, I mean, he has a chance. I don't know if he will start, but he potentially could be a starter this year on that defensive line. Frosty Rucker, very productive, very good, but I could see him by mid-year being the starter at that left defensive tackle position where, you know, opposite Calais Campbell.
Yeah, and the thing with Kimdiche, and I went back and looked at numbers because I wanted to make sure, like, I wasn't crazy. And so I went back and, like, looked at, like, all the draft numbers. And his numbers are really close to actually JJ Watts. Now, they're not quite as good. I think JJ out jumped him by 2 inches, and you might say that's, you know, 2 inches, that's not much, but it is when you're talking about weight. He out jumped him right by 2 inches in the vertical. He out jumped him by 4 inches in the broad. I mean, so he's really, really close. I mean, it's not, you know, leaps and bounds different. And then he beat him by like a point 0.03 seconds on the 40-yard dash, or 0.06 seconds on the 40-yard dash. So the numbers were similar, not quite as good, because JJ's a freak. But when you watch him play, he he at times, not, and this is where, you know, why people were worried about him, but he at times can play in the same type of dominating fashion. Like I said, the Alabama game is like, you turn on the Alabama game and people roll their eyes and say, well, he just did it one game. Yeah, but he did it against the best team in the college football, and he did it against a guy in Ryan Kelly that got drafted 18th, and then he did it against a guy in Cam Robinson who's going to be drafted in the first round next year from Alabama. So he was dominant, and that's, you know, that's important, that he can play well against guys that are going to have the same skill level or, you know, better than everybody else he's going to play against. I really think his ceiling is, you know, on the Muhammad Wilkerson spectrum of, you know, dominant 8 to 12 sack a year from that interior / edge, you know.
And that's incredible.
In a 34 defense, because he does penetrate so well upfield. He's very adept at using his arms and his hands to create separation, but he also has that initial step that's really just not a teachable trait and something that, you know, people just have, and he has it. So that's his high end. His low end, you know, you look at it, maybe
Frosty Rucker. I mean,
yeah, Frosty Rucker's a good one. Mike Neal in Green Bay is another one, kind of in a similar, you know, size frame. Where, and the Cardinals were really interested in Mike Neal. Now, you know, now they probably got a souped up version of that. So you just look at it, and you have to be happy. I get the fear from the fans because they missed on Jonathan Cooper, and he was a sure thing. You know, he was the best guard prospect in the last, what, decade. And then, you know, they kind of drafted Buchanan, and then there was this position switch, and everybody had a question, like, okay, what's going on? And, you know, year two, he really stepped up. DJ Humphreys didn't even play as a rookie. So now it's like, well, we can't have another one of those. You know, we're in a window. We gotta be a team that gets impact from our players, you know, and you can't take a guy that could be a off the field issue. And it's like, you know what, honestly, they're in a position where they have to take chances on top five talent like that, because if it works out, guess what, then that their defense goes from, you know, top five to potentially special. And that's what you want to see.
And yes, Kim Dichi, he was a guy, I think I've said it, I wanted that if I could have picked a player for that to fall perfect, and it fell that way, and it works out that way, and I couldn't be happier. Now, other possibilities at that point, there really weren't many in terms of what you wanted to see. People were talking defensive back, but you look at the guys that came off the board, one of the things the Cardinals, especially if they're going early, they wanted length and speed. But, you know, the Bengals got William Jackson III. He was a guy that was probably on the Cardinals' radar. The Steelers go and grab Artie Burns, who would have been a very Cardinals pick. Eli Apple went, you know, top 10, which is unheard of. Keanu Neal goes at number 17. And so, you know, and Carl Joseph, not the length, but the tenacity perhaps they would have gone with. He goes at number 14. Vernon Hargraves goes to the Bucks. I mean, that he was never going to be available, but you look at the defensive backs in terms of, okay, we're going to get a first round type of defensive back. I mean, unless you go to Xavien Howard, who went early second, and I don't know if that is, you know, the drafts I saw, I don't think I saw anyone with giving him a first round grade. So you would have had to have dipped down to the next tier. And Mackenzie Alexander, you know, he just didn't fit the profile for the Cardinals were doing, in my opinion. So, you know, there really was no other good choice. The Noah Spence going as far down as he did, apparently, you know, the Cardinals said that they had about 15 to 20 guys that were just completely off their board with character issues, which means that they had questions and Michael Bidwell wasn't comfortable. So maybe Noah Spence fell into that category. No matter, you know, he's done the last 20 drug tests and he sent them to the teams. Maybe Bidwell wasn't comfortable. So yeah, there really was no other good pick. And that was absolutely, you know, you weren't going to get anyone more talented at a position where you were going to get more production now and down the line.
No, and like I said, the only other option to me was Chris Jones. You could talk me into Miles Jack, but I mean, everybody else was a, like I said, a wash at that point. Like, and obviously Cody Whitehair I would have been fine with, but here's the difference, right? So Cody Whitehair at 29, and then who was around at 100 and whatever, where they picked Evan Bame. Willie Henry I liked, but if you get a Whitehair Willie Henry stack versus Kim Dichie and Evan Bame stack, I'm going to go with Kim Dichie right. and Evan Bame every time. And that's not, that's not revisionist history or anything like that. This is a reality. Like Kim Dichie, I said, was one of four players with a special talent in this draft. And Evan Bame was my OC4, if you count Whitehair as a center. So, I mean, and Henry was like DT8 or 10. So that was the difference to me. I didn't see a reason to pass on that to draft Whitehair. Even though I do like Cody Whitehair, and I think he's going to be a great player for the Chicago Bears.
Right. So let's move on a little bit. Next on Revenge of Birds Radio, let's talk about, obviously Kim Dichie is the big one, but let's talk next about perhaps the biggest, if you could talk about controversial pick, the biggest question mark. Up next, we're going to talk about their third round pick. Back on Revenge of the Birds Radio, now we talked about Robert Kim Dichie, the Cardinals' first-round draft pick. They didn't have a second-round pick. Keim and Arians joked about after day two started the press conference and how excited they were for, it's not every time that you can get a Pro Bowl 12.5 sack guy with a second-round pick. That's funny and all, but it's we were glad the trade happened. But we get to the bottom of the third round now. They made a pick of a guy who on paper, you're going to say he's hard not to like. Brandon Williams out of Texas A&M, 5'11 and 3/8". They list him at 6 foot. The Cardinals have him listed at 6 foot. So 6 foot, almost 200 pounds, elite speed. But he's only played cornerback 1 year of his entire life. And that was this last year. And even he says, if you give him a grade on how he played that 1 year, it's C+, maybe. And this
and
is
it wasn't that good.
Yeah, and in the this is the pick where people were, wait, what? And you got an interesting perspective on the text that you got that you sent to me, because in day two, defensive backs were flying off the board. And these are all defensive backs where you could say, yeah, that would work. So so we go down to the second round. Xavien Howard comes off the board at, number 38, 6'2", 6'200". Then you get a little bit later, then the safeties start coming up the board. Then you get Mackenzie Alexander with the 54th pick, but he's a little small. TJ Green, a guy the Cardinals was connected to the Cardinals in the first round. He goes to the Colts at number 57. Sean Davis, the Steelers end up making two defensive back picks that probably were players that Artie Burns and Sean Davis, the corner / safety from Maryland, goes. Cyrus Jones goes to the Patriots. James Bradbury goes to the Panthers. And that's just the second round. Third round, the run continues. Kevin Byard goes to the Titans. Then you get Will Redmond to the 49ers. Then you go Darian Thompson, a guy that you wrote about that you really like. Darian Thompson goes to the Giants. Then Kavari Russell goes. Then Daryl Worley goes. And suddenly Kendall Fuller even goes. And then you're left with the Cardinals. When are they going to possibly draft a defensive back? And then they come out with the name Brandon Williams, and everyone in the press room is like, wait, who? And so we're all scrambling for who the heck this guy is, even though we went to a SEC school.
Well, that's what happens when you play 52% of possible snaps. Like, that's not a shot. Like, people take that as like a, oh, you know, what are you saying? It's a bad pick? No, that's the reality. He only played 52% of the snaps. Like, it's not like I'm saying anything that's a negative. It's a reality. Here's the thing. They took a chance on an athlete because by that time, the good players were gone. So, I mean, like you just read, I think it was 10 names that went on day two. Day two alone. That doesn't include the four names or five names or six names, you know, depending on if you thought they would take a safety again, that went on day one. So you're talking 15 players before they get up there to pick on day two. That at the, you know, one position group that everybody said this is what they need to address. So what did you want them to do? You want them to take a guy that's big and, you know, stiff, a guy like Justin Burris, who went later, or I'm looking at the names here. And, you know, I know people like Justin Simmons from Boston College, but he's not an elite athlete.
Tavon Young's tiny.
Tavon Young is small. Ryan Smith is – there's not much of the – you know, a big difference between what Smith was and what Williams was, outside of Williams is a better, you know, straight line speed athlete, Eric Murray. But look at these names I'm listing. I mean, after the Cardinals took Brandon Williams, Justin Simmons, then Tavon Young, Eric Murray, you know, Miles Killebrew.
All the names were gone. I mean, talent, like the ones you think might be able to even, you know, possibly contribute year one, were already off the board.
Yeah, and so you look at it and you just say, okay, this is what they have. And here's what, you know, what I text you and what somebody told me is that they didn't make this pick for this year. They know he can immediately help them as a special teams player. They know that, and they're satisfied with that. But they think he can be even more. And so they're betting on an elite athlete over betting on a guy that maybe played well in college. And so that's the choice you have to make there. Are you going to take a chance on a guy that's you know, an elite athlete, or a guy that was a really productive college player that doesn't have the athletic measurables or desirables for most teams? I sent two messages to Patriots insiders because I saw that name brought up by fans to kind of justify, quote unquote, the pick, and said, yeah, he was in for a visit, was one answer. Said fit their athletic profile well, but they weren't going to pull the trigger. So take that for what you will. Like, were they going to draft him? Who knows? But he fit what they like to do, and they had him in for a visit. So maybe they were going to pull the trigger. Maybe this was the guy the Patriots wanted at, you know, wherever, and then the Cardinals took him, so they decided to trade out. I don't know if that's true. That's the information I got, so there you go. You know, you can decipher it yourself from there. But so,
go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say, but you know, like I text you, this wasn't a pick for impact this year. They still want Justin Bethel to win this job. They still want Justin Bethel to be a good corner, but they want somebody in the pipeline in case Justin Bethel doesn't make it this year. They're gonna give him the whole year too to mess it up. I'm just warning you guys now. Yeah, they'll probably bring in a vet as well, but they're going to give him the whole year to mess this up before they, you know, pull the plug on the Bethel as a cornerback, because $5 million a year is way too much to pay
a gunner.
So he's going to be cornerback two, and if that doesn't work out, then it just doesn't work out, and there's nothing you can do from that point. But, you know, when you just – break it down. This was an absolute need pick, and they looked at their board and they said, this is the best cornerback on our board. Maybe they had a fifth round grade on him. You don't know that. But the reality was they knew that they weren't going to get a better chance to draft a corner that they liked, and so they had to pull the trigger there.
And, you know, this is where we get to see sort of the draft philosophy of Keim and Arians. And in this, I really like how they do it. There was a lot of talk locally on the radio about this pick. He is a question mark. I have no problem with the pick as a third rounder. The Cardinals apparently, you know, they have a system they use. And it appears that, number one, they want superior athletes because superior athletic talents will sort of trump other things on the field under one condition. And this is the other part. You know, they are very, very big on passionate effort. They always talk about it. And it's almost nauseating how much they talk about having a passion and a love for football. And Brandon Williams is a kid who, you know, 1 year, you know, he's a super competitive guy. He was in a running back by committee. The reason why he was willing to go back to cornerback, make the move to cornerback, is because, you know, Kevin Sumlin, Coach Sumlin, comes up to him and said he sits down and talks with him, and he mentions, you know, starting and playing, and that's all he needed. He wanted to be on the football field. So this is a kid who wants to play, wants to compete, and wants to do it. And then even that first year, he was a captain of that team, and that's a big trait for the Cardinals. So when we see this, and we kind of talk about it for the smaller school guys, is so they if there's any question as to their upside, they take the guy with elite tools, which Brandon Williams does have, and they raved about some of the abilities that he has, some of those athletic talent, those movement abilities. And so they take that, plus you look at the, you know, what you can measure of heart and desire and competitiveness, and you say, okay, this guy is going to project much higher because of, no matter how raw he is right now, because of what he's going to do. And I love the, you know, kudos to you for thinking about this. The Cardinals have been very good with their third round picks. They tend to overlook the one that hasn't quite yet worked out, and that's in Kareem Martin. And the Kareem Martin pick was, and you said, this is exactly like Kareem Martin, because Kareem Martin had athletic measurables comparable to Jadeveon Clowney, but hadn't played the position that they were going to want him in, and he still hasn't panned out in that sense. But he still has an impact on the field because he's really good on special teams. He's had a couple impact plays. And this is where we get Brandon Williams. They know he can make an impact on special teams. He will be a very, very good special teams player. And they already see in coverage, they love his ability to press man. So they already have a cornerback skill that you look. He can guard man-to-man, and he can do it really well. And he's only been playing the position a year. So if he can learn this other stuff, he can project to, you know, a better version of Justin Bethel, whom they have said is even potentially more talented than even a Patrick Peterson. Not that he will be better than Patrick Peterson, but he has more athletic talent. He's more athletically special than Patrick Peterson. So I like the pick in that sense, and I'm okay with the philosophy, especially where the Cardinals are today. I've been saying for weeks, you've heard me say it on the show, that no matter what corner they drafted, whether it was first round or later, probably wasn't going to beat out Justin Bethel anyway. Justin Bethel, this is why they didn't get a big time corner. We talked about it. They want Justin Bethel to be the starter. If they bring in a veteran, it's going to be a guy, maybe Jerod Powers, or maybe they bring back Leon Hall after he's, you know, all healed up from his surgery, a guy that can do the job, but isn't going to command the job where Justin Bethel has to feel like necessarily that they don't have trust in him. And so I like the pick. I don't love it, but it was a head scratcher.
It is, but it's also understandable. Like, and that, you know, as we get through the whole, as you talk through it, you realize what's going on and why they made the pick. And even though, you know, we may not agree with the selection, we understand how important it was for them to come away with athletic defensive backs. And, you know, they ended up spending a lot of draft capital on defensive backs in this draft. And so I think that that shows you what their philosophy is, and that's let's throw athleticism at the position and see what sticks, but also let's make sure that they can have an impact on special teams. And so Brandon Williams was the first part of that, and I think we saw that. The only player I would have picked over him, honestly, and you know, boo me if you want, would be Connor Cook.
Like, yes.
By that time, Joe Schobert. I don't need Joe Schobert because he's basically, you know, Alex Okafor, Marcus Golden. Like, he's the same type of player. Charles Tapper, you didn't need because, or Charles Tapper or Sheldon Day, you did not need because you drafted the superior version. Josh Perry, you could have talked me into as an inside linebacker, but I think you already have him and Kevin Minter, and you can get a Josh Perry pretty much every draft. And that's not a bad thing. That's just the reality. Like I said, you weren't going to talk me into anybody else with who they had already selected by this time, because, you know, just looking at it, there weren't a bunch of names that I'm like, oh, should have drafted him and said, oh, why didn't you, you know? So that was my thought process on
two guys for me. Two guys for me. One is Connor Cook, if they were going to look to the quarterback position, and two would be Cardale Jones. I don't know where they had them graded. Obviously, they didn't have him at a third-round grade, or maybe they did, because comment that Bruce Arians said is they had a quarterback graded for every single round, but just that they got drafted before them. So obviously, Connor Cook was probably a fourth-round grade. He goes to the top of the fourth round. Cardale Jones was probably a fifth-round grade. He went at the very last pick of the fourth round. So say what you will, I guess that's what happens with that. Fourth-round pick is a pick that seems to be universally loved by media, fans, and my goodness, the team is certainly talking him up. And that's Evan Bame out of Missouri. You knew that the center position was going to be addressed. They actually draft a true center as opposed to what they alluded to they might do in the later rounds is pick up a guy who projects to center, and they get a guy who, you know, if you're going to pick an offensive lineman for your team, this is kind of the makeup that you have. He's super competitive, like fiercely competitive, mean on the line, and he's a leader. He started from a true freshman. He's every single game he was at Missouri for four straight years. He started every game. The only player in team history to do that, starting as a true freshman to start every year. He was a guard to start off, played center the other years. He was a team captain. You know, he checks off all the boxes. He is not elitely athletic, but he's not unathletic. And you tweeted out a highlight where you get to see something that he does. He can get out and move, and he can get out to the second level, and he can find guys, make contact, and put them to the ground, as opposed to, you know, what you left unsaid. I mean, that was what Jonathan Cooper could do, moved really well, and we saw it last year. Just when he got to the second level, he didn't hit anybody.
Right, and that's, you know, kind of what my philosophy was with Bame, is he connects, and that's a different, you know, that's a different talent than being able to move, and that's a different way to look at things. Overall, I just think, like I said, I really like the player. I really like the leader. He's basically like the peak Lyle Cindeline, and you know, that was a very good player. So, and maybe very good strong, but that was a very good anchor to an offensive line. And remember, that's a guy that played, what, 9 years as an undrafted free agent?
Yes.
Started 9 seasons or something like that. So that's a good pick. You know, if we want to go with the not lying Bruce Arians theme, he did start his career at left guard and played his entire freshman season at left guard as a starter. So maybe that's what Bruce Arians was trying to say.
Maybe.
But, you know, overall, I think this is just, you had to get a guy that was going to fit in, I don't want to say emotionally, but mentally with what.
Potty and Mathis?
Yeah, you have to get a guy.
Bame fits perfectly.
He does, and he's a guy that will absolutely endear himself to his teammates, and that's so important to the growth of this organization and the ability to become a, you know, a great offensive line, because let's be honest, they ended up at the end of the season just being really average, right? Like, they weren't great at all. They were really average. And so that's, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. So, but now you want to see them take the next step. Obviously, the biggest question mark remains, you know, center, right guard, and right tackle. And there's nothing wrong with that, but those questions remain on those guys. You know, how much does Evan Mathis have left in the tank? Who is DJ Humphries? And, you know, can Bame be, you know, peak Lyle Sinline, or is he just Lyle Sinline? And so that's, you know, those are still fair questions to ask, but I don't think anybody's going to be negative about this pick, especially with what centers were left on the board. I mean, you can definitely talk me into Jack Allen, but there was a reason Allen went undrafted. And even if you don't agree with it, you know, the NFL has requirements for size and speed and, you know, height and weight, and just Allen just didn't meet those requirements, unfortunately for him. I still think he's going to be a successful guy, but I think Bane was the right pick, and he fit with exactly what the Cardinals want to do moving forward.
And look at that offensive line now. You really have four guys. If you want to talk, you know, your traditional grinder offensive lineman personality-wise, you have that in Jared Vilmdeer and Mike Iupati and Evan Bame and in Evan Mathis. The one wild card is you have it, DJ Humphries, who's, we don't really know. We know he's really young. He's very athletic. We don't know yet if he has that nasty to him, but if you get 4 out of 5 with that nasty that on that offensive line, that's going to be really, really fun to watch this next year, especially the production that the Cardinals had on offense with really a pretty average offensive line. Is you add toughness. Well, Sinline was the same way, only he didn't have the physical tools. He was older, so we get an equally moved Bame athletically. If you look at how he tested almost identical to Sinline in terms of all the athletic measurements. But now he's a much younger, so he's a young Lyle Sinline. So he's going to move better than the Sinline that was here. He's stronger than Sinline and has the same sort of mentality. That's going to be really fun to see.
It is, and it's going to be enjoyable to watch this offensive line, which is, you know, something we haven't said before.
Fifth round, this is where the Cardinals had 2 picks, and they go with, and the rest of the draft, the theme is small schools. And so they go with the 30th pick and the 167th pick overall, they take out of Midwestern State a guy that, what? Who? And the Cardinals do it every year, only this time they went to the well many times. Marquis Christian, safety, fast, 4.4 guy, but not particularly big. 5'10", 196 is what he's listed at safety. And then they go with Cole Toner, offensive lineman out of Harvard, played tackle, projects to guard, at least what they're saying here. And interesting picks to say the least. At least Christian, you know, he comes highly decorated as he was the small school defensive player of the year.
Small college defensive player of the year.
And the area scouts really loved him. They sent Adrian Wilson out there, and in the words that they said that he came back with his jaw dropping. So not he impressed Adrian Wilson. I can't remember if it was Kimer Arian said that Christian, he will strike you. So he is a hitter. But if you're looking at the physical profile, he's got the speed, but doesn't look to match the size that they have. So again, this is a projection pick, a guy that, okay, they believe he can contribute now on special teams. But he's not going to play on defense because they've got Tyvon Branch, you've got Tyrann Mathieu, you've got Tony Jefferson, and heck, you've even got DJ Swearinger and Chris Clemens who will see the field before him.
Yeah, and he is a truly developmental pick, but again, special teams, special teams, special teams, we're going to harp on it a ton. The special teams coverage units were awful last year, and it is not, you know, surprising that they drafted players that can impact special teams in a positive way. Marquis Christian is one of those guys. If you want to talk about you know, who he is as a player. Just watch kind of Keanu Neal out of Florida, and then just a small school version of that. And that's, you know, that's what you, that's where you get drafted. If that's who you are as a player, you're drafted in the fifth, sixth round. And that's what they did with him. You know, I watched some of his huddle video and then saw some interviews that Emory Hunt did, and talked to Emory and read some reports on him. He's a small in the box safety. What does that mean? You know, basically he's DJ Swearinger, right? Like, he's another DJ Swearinger. He's not a guy you can leave in deep coverage right now, and he's going to have a lot of work to do. But he's talented. And like you said, he's got some physical abilities. And you look at his numbers, 4.46, 40, 35-inch vert, great short shuttle, and three cone was out of this world at 6.85. So he's a guy that can move, and so that's what you want. And like I said, I'm not expecting him to be anything more than a special teams guy. If he ever develops into a depth role of safety, then you got more than you bargained for in the fifth round.
Right. The second pick there of the compensatory pick at number 170, they take the offensive lineman Cole Toner out of Harvard. For me, of all the selections, this is my head scratcher. This is the one that doesn't make any sense to me, because he is not top lead. You know, if you look at the offensive lineman, he's smart. Obviously, he went to Harvard, but he's obviously smart
to go there.
Supposedly. That's what they tell me.
They
dominate. I mean, he dominated the Ivy League. Let's not great competition there, because the only football players you get there are the really, really smart football players. And the really, really smart football players aren't always the very best football players. But he doesn't meet the top of the line athletically. When he played in the Senior Bowl, in that week of the Senior Bowl, he didn't really stand out. So he doesn't really fit the profile of a guy that the Cardinals would take. So to me, this is the one head-scratcher. Now, at the end of the fifth round, what are you expecting? Okay, he's versatile. He can play right tackle. Apparently, he can play anywhere on the line. And so you have the potential of a guy, and they're already talking about a guard. So he's your swing guard backup. I don't know what else he can do special teams wise. Apparently he does a long snap. So that's kind of out of the question.
That was a good question. Whoever told you to ask that.
And we didn't ask it directly. It was Bobby Mack from AZ Central who asked, do you believe that the guy that your long snapper is on the roster now? And that would include the draft picks. And Bruce Arians said, nope.
No, but you look at it, I think he's brought in to compete with Earl Watford. I think you look at it, you say you have Valdir, Upati, Bame, Mathis, Humphreys on the, and then Shipley's going to make this roster.
Yeah.
Because he's the backup, you know, guard or backup center, unless Toner really, really plays well at center. So that's six, and they keep eight usually, right?
Yeah, they usually keep eight, dress seven, so you're going to have a swing tackle.
So is Watford the swing tackle, or is Toner the swing tackle? Or do
Well, and there's a couple of guys on the roster that they really like, like practice squad. Rob Crisp is a guy that they really like, and he's a left tackle. They really like, for some reason, they like this kid, Antoine McLean.
But they have him listed at guard right now.
He is a guard, yes. So, you know, those guys are in the mix. But so Cole, Toner, who's a listed now with the team with the guard, I think, you know, maybe he is the, you know, Earl Watford is essentially the guard right tackle. He kind of swings both on that way. And he's going to be a free agent after this year, which means he's probably not going to come back because he's going to be too expensive. So if they can get a guy, even a guy who doesn't have to make the roster, if he gets cut, guess what? He's not going to pick up anywhere. He'll end up on the practice squad. And they kind of have, looking forward to 2017, where you've got your new backup guard tackle guy.
Yeah, and I think that's what he is, and I think that's what they're looking at. It's – he's not coming in to compete for more than a roster spot. So that's basically it. I mean, I'm looking at the names. Unless you really wanted a wide receiver or a running back, the only name I really like there is Jatavis Brown from Akron, but he's like 5'10". Oh, they list him at 5'11". So
yeah.
So I mean, I don't. I mean, there was nobody that this draft was. You know,
they should have drafted the German receiver.
No. I know. People wanted them to draft Drew Kaser out of Texas A&M, or the kid from Utah, but that just wasn't going to happen.
Colby Listenby is a guy I could have seen going there, but you know, I thought he might be more of their end of the sixth round pick, and he ended up going in the middle of the sixth to Buffalo. I think he would have been very much the Bruce Arians receiver, but you know, he's a Buffalo, and I'm a little bit sad about that.
We have that right, though. I think we have that right.
So, last pick, Harlan Miller. This was another kind of head scratcher. You see the size, you see the length, 6'1", 182. Okay. And apparently he plays fast, but then he tests and he did not run well. He was, 4.67? And he wasn't hurt. We asked him that. So was you dealing with any injury? So he's just a guy that's not fast. And this is the one where you're like, wait, what? But this is also a pick I think that Todd Mache really liked. And honestly, I don't know anything about Harlan Miller, but on the pick, I put a poll up today of who's your favorite draft pick. Let me pull that up. But the numbers were really surprising. You know, I thought Evan Bame and Robert Kimdichie would be the two overwhelming favorites. And they were the leaders, but so we've got over 400 votes, and Robert Kimdichie's got nearly 200. And in second place with 80 votes is Harlan Miller is the favorite draft pick, ahead of Evan Bane by a couple of votes. That surprises me because I know nothing about him other than the fact that he's slow.
But you know what? He's slow, but he's sticky. He's one of those like weird cornerbacks that doesn't test really well, but he's always in position. You know, you're never going to want to compare a guy to, you know, Richard Sherman, obviously. But
okay,
similar to that, he's not as long, you know, and tall. So that's a huge thing as well. So, but he does have some good size and length. And what he did really well, and people, you know, sometimes I was saving this for this talk right here. So Harlan Miller ran a 4.65 40, but he had a 1.18 broad jump and a 35.5 inch vertical. Compare that to Brandon Williams, who had, you know, a blazing 4.37 40, but his broad jump, or no, his broad jump was the same 1.18, but his vertical jump was only 30 inches, like the first percentile.
Wow.
In that one.
That doesn't make sense.
Yeah. So what he is he has good explosiveness on making plays on the ball. He tracks well. He's like I said, I described him as sticky. That's the best, like most endearing term I can say about him. He's just, and he's an excellent tackler, excellent tackler. So, you know, again, that'll endear him to the Arizona Cardinals. But when you look at it overall, he's the guy that I think can press for playing time in this draft class the earliest. Similar to Ed Stinson a couple years ago, when you're just talking about
plug-and-play guy.
Kind of plug-and-play and able to do things. Whereas I think, you know, Brandon Williams and – the other guy's name's escaping me right now, but Marquis Christian. I wanted to call him Tart. I was thinking of the guy from San Francisco drafted last year, Jaquisti Tart. But yeah, Marquis Christian. Those guys, you know, I think are a little more athletic and have the higher upside, but a guy like Harlan Miller can probably crack the lineup sooner because he is really smooth in coverage and seems to make plays and be around the receiver at all times. That's not saying he's going to, but I could see him being like their fourth cornerback when they go four DBs and Matthew drops into the slot. Like if they want a fourth one on, he could be the guy.
So if you're talking about the entirety, the totality of this draft class, you compared it to a kilt lifter. If in terms of pizza, in terms of beer, in terms of pizza, call it Papa John's. I'm a Papa John's fan, but it's not for everyone. It's not premium pizza. I think it's a really good mix. I like the draft. I am always on the optimistic side. I see players and I'm like, ooh, I see how they can project to this, to this, to this. I'm guilty of that. So I really like how they approached it. You have potentially, you should have one starter and another guy who might start, and then a bunch of guys who should, you know, at least three others who should be special teams guys on the field. And then Toner, I don't know about him, you know. But other than that, I really like it. And so I think it's a good draft. I don't know if it's a great draft, but it could be a great draft because Kim Dichie alone might make this a great draft class.
Yeah, and I think I wrote about this, you know, and I said this. Kim Dichie really is the guy that this draft hangs on. Like, everything else is it could be good and impactful. You know, maybe Brandon Williams makes a huge jump. I don't think he will, but maybe Brandon Williams makes a huge jump. But overall, I think this draft hangs on Kim Dichie because I think you have a good player in Evan Bame, and you know what you're going to get of him. You're never going to have an all-pro center, but you're going to have a guy that you just don't find, you know, you don't have to worry about. Like I said, this is 08 to 2012 Lyle Cindeline, you know, 2011 Lyle Cindeline. That's what you're hoping for here. So the question is Kim Dichie a star? And you don't need him to be a star, and that's really unfair to expect that of him. But, you know, is he a guy that can be that, you know, quote-unquote special player and be the one that makes the draft, like you said, special? Because if they just get Kim Dichie and he's just a rotational guy, if he's Frosty Rucker, and then Brandon Williams is just Justin Bethel and never develops into a corner, and Evan Bame is a guy that you're looking to, you know, he's 2013, 14, and 15 Lyle Cindeline, then I think it makes a huge difference in how you look at this versus right now where you have that hope of what they can be.
We saw two positions that we thought might get addressed, the receiver and quarterback. Were you surprised? Now, I personally was a little bit surprised I didn't go with receiver, but not overly surprised because Arians had said how slow this class is overall. But at quarterback, I thought I was almost certain. I felt it in my bones the way I felt Kim Dichie. I thought for certain Cardale Jones was going to be a Cardinal, and I wanted that. Should they have gone – I mean, with – Between Connor Cook and Cardale Jones, should the Cardinals have pulled the trigger on one of those two quarterbacks? And do you think they'll regret that?
It's hard to say because both those guys didn't go to good spots, in my opinion. I think Connor going to the Oakland is going to be a good spot in terms of development, but we're never going to see who he is as a player, right? So that's a good question to watch there. Then on the other hand, you have Cardale, who's in Buffalo, and Greg Roman's not, you know, he's part of the developmental plan of Colin Kaepernick, but I just don't know if he's a guy that's going to develop overall, you know, and turn into something. I'll say this though: if either one of them becomes, an above average starter in the NFL, and you know, 2 years from now when we're doing episode 390 on this show and we're talking about the Cardinals draft, and
we're gonna be talking about Mike Glennon or Matthew Stafford.
If it's Stafford, if it's Glennon.
No, I would love for the next reclamation project to be Matthew Stafford because I think he is Carson Palmer in a different body.
Yeah, but yeah, so I think that's the only way you can say that they missed on not taking those guys. But overall, you know, I don't think there was nothing. I look at this draft and I'm like, oh, I would definitely change that outside of maybe Connor Cook or, you know, over Brandon Williams. But that's really it.
Talk briefly, just last couple minutes. If you look at the drafts across the NFC West, were there any picks? I mean, you've already talked about how the Rams don't sort of make sense because you don't love Jared Goff. And, you know, historically, air raid quarterbacks aren't good. And on top of that, this Rams team taking a quarterback first overall and losing pieces on defense, which is where their strength was. Yes, they've got Todd Gurley. There's questions on the offensive line. How is he going to do anything this year other than get – you know, be bad. Like, honestly, I don't get what the Rams did other than they bet the farm on Goff being a star.
Yeah, they bet the farm on Goff being an elite player, and we'll have to wait and see if that turns out. Like you and I have said, we don't think it's going to, but, you know, we'll have to wait and see. San Francisco, I talked about it last night. I wasn't, like, in love with their draft, but I really liked their first two picks. I really liked DeForest Buckner. I'm not a huge Josh Garnett fan, but based on what they want to do, I think that was a great pick, and I think you're going to see a team that's all of a sudden going to get back to being physical and competitive again. And so I think that's what you'll see on that. Will Redmond and Rashard Robinson are both interesting picks because they're, you know, Redmond was injured most of the year, and then Robinson didn't play at all. So,
and the 49ers just like drafting injured players. So they like drafting knee. They like drafting guys with knee injuries. It's kind of their thing.
And then you want to talk about a fit that I did like, Jeff Driscoll. I know some Cardinals fans liked him, but Jeff Driscoll to Chip Kelly is a really interesting, like, he's basically Colin Kaepernick. He's not as athletic as Colin Kaepernick, but he's basically Colin Kaepernick. And so if, you know, that doesn't work at first, you don't succeed, you know, try again. And so San Francisco overall, I mean, like I said, I gave it a kilt lifter because I think it was a good draft. But I could see why some people wouldn't like it. And then the Seattle Seahawks, I just don't want to talk about it because I really like the draft. So
I bemoan two of their picks. They're two picks that make me very sad. One is CJ Procise. That kid, you know, you talked about it. He's a David Johnson clone.
Yeah, he's the closest thing to David Johnson in this draft.
And
they got him in the same exact area.
And then Jerron Reed on top of that. Jerron Reed, jeez. That's the last thing it is a physical cog right in the middle of that defense.
Yeah,
that's,
and he's going to be great to counter what the Cardinals are doing. And honestly, that's what you look at what the Cardinals did. They're trying to counter what Seattle does and what Carolina does. And on the same, you know, on the flip side, Jerron Reed allows the Seahawks to counter what Arizona does on the offensive line, because he's a guy that can take on double teams of Evan Mathis and Evan Bame and not get moved. And so that's, you know, that's what the question is. I actually did not mind the Jermaine Afidi pick because apparently they're going to move him to guard. So that's going to be really interesting because he can move and he's long. So that's important.
And if that's the truth, then I'm glad that San Francisco jumped up and took Garnett. If in fact that they were trying to keep him from going to Seattle, because based on what I've heard from you, isn't it Justice who pounds the table for Garnett, saying that he's the best guard in the draft?
Yeah, and he would be he's on that Mike Iupati kind of scale in terms of physicality and nastiness. I don't think he's nearly as good as Iupati was coming out. But he's, you know, he's that type of player. And so, yeah, so getting Garnett as opposed to Ifedi would have been, you know, better in my book. But I like the Ifedi pick for them because he does things where, you know, you look at the Cardinals, what do they have interior? They have Rodney Gunter, 6'5", you know, 305, Corey Peters, 6'4", 320, and now Robert Kimdiche, 6'4", 290, and then obviously Calais Campbell. And what Efidi gives them is length inside to combat those athletic guys, because, you know, sometimes when those guys get hands put on them, they're not nearly as effective. And so that's what this pick does if he turns out. I like Nick Vinette, and I didn't understand the Alex Collins pick, to be completely honest. But I like their draft. If I was ranking the drafts, and this is in a non-homer way, I'd probably say Seattle 1, and then Arizona and San Francisco, it'd be a coin flip. I think Arizona's has more upside. I think San Francisco is going to get more impact initially, and that's just because they're a worse team, so they have more room for improvement initially. So then I think St. Louis pulls up the rear. But here's the reality too: St. Louis has the ultimate trump card if
Jared Goff is good.
Jared Goff is good, because all of a sudden nothing else matters, and we've seen that with. You know, we've seen that with Seattle. We've seen that with San Francisco. Say what you will about a lot of things, but, you know, having good guys, good quarterbacks makes a difference. Obviously, good coaching helps too at San Francisco, but having good quarterback play makes a difference.
And final thoughts for me on the draft overall for the Cardinals. This is a draft like a good college program recruits. It is not drafting for now overall. They are drafting for 1, 2, 3 years from now because they already have a very talented roster. And so you look at how an Alabama or you look at how an LSU recruits. Good football programs in college are projecting down the line always. And the Cardinals are doing that right now. So they put together a recruiting class, a draft class that includes two guys who probably will make impacts this year and significant impacts, ideally. And then they have other guys who they believe will develop into either one who they think will probably develop into a starter quality, and at least a couple of others who should just be solid depth. And so overall, I cannot fault, you know, overall, this is a really good draft if you look at what they were attempting to accomplish, and I love it.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more with you. I think overall they drafted for the here and now at two spots, and then they drafted for down the line in three spots. You know, Cole Toner, you and I both said, I think their hope is that he can become Earl Watford or wait for it, Bradley Saul, and beat that player. And be, you know, just a 4-year backup, and then they'll move on and draft the next Cole Toner. That's what we'll say in you know, 2020 when we're doing this show, and, you know, we're talking about, I can't believe they drafted, you know, old smart white guy from Princeton, you know, to be in the fifth round when they could have got him in the, as an undrafted free agent. So I think that's what we're going to see. You know, I love taking chances on athletes. I'm big on that. And what I mean by that is obviously athletic players. And I think the Cardinals really did that. And I think they capped their draft by getting a guy in Harlan Miller who could end up being a 5 to 7 year player in the NFL because he's a good coverage guy. And that's so needed in the NFL. He's probably never going to be a cornerback too. No big deal. But if he's a guy that can stick on your roster, who's the small guy the Cardinals had for all those years?
Mike Adams.
If he can be a Mike Adams type, I think he was on the Cardinals roster for like 5 or 6 years, right? Like,
yes.
That's what you want out of a 6th-round pick. Mike Adams was never a great player, but he was a solid contributor that you could trust every year when he was on the team. And that's what is important in the later rounds. Yeah, it's great to get a gem every once in a while, but honestly, just getting solid contributors is just as important.
So we'll wrap up the show tonight. We're going to push undrafted free agents till, let's just push it to next week. We'll talk undrafted free agents. I know we'd like to talk some more, but we're already at, you know, over an hour and it's late and both of us need to sleep. So we'll call it a night. And plus, some of those undrafted rookies might not even be on the roster next week because there's going to be rookie camp. And it seems every single year, one or two guys of the tryout guys makes the squad, and they end up cutting a couple of their undrafted. On a sad note, Valerian Umezioki, who was on the show and got to talk to him and learn a bit of his story. As a result of the undrafted rookies, his step time on the Arizona Cardinals is over. So unfortunately, that story ends, at least for now, and I'm a little bit sad about that because, you know, I got to know him.
Yeah, and I'll give you my hot take for this draft, this undrafted free agent before we head out of here. I think Jake Coker can make this roster over Matt Barkley.
Boom. And we'll talk about that some more next week. Talking next week, undrafted free agents. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. He hosts NFL Draft Breakdown Podcast, this Venture Birds Radio. Find us on iTunes, Facebook, Stitcher, Google Play, everything else. And go Cardinals. This has been a great draft. Have a good night, everybody.
Have a good one.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.